reflects what we're doing here. And then after that, we'll probably have about 15 or 20 minutes for questions or reflection on your part. Before I begin, I'd like to ask someone to be a convener. Basically, we'll be going from 11:40 to 12:30. We're a little bit late right now, but around 12:15, I'd like to have someone here to raise their hand or let me know that there are 15 minutes to go, because I have a way, being the extrovert preference person I am, to go on and on without somebody stopping me. Okay? So who would like to look at their watch and... Okay, thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to kind of go around and get to know you, and maybe in one or two sentences, no longer than that, because our time is limited. Just give me your name and just say in one or two sentences you're interested in being here today. Start over here.
My name is Larry Rosenketter, and I have no special interest in the Civil War, but I just found it possibly interesting.
Thank you.
My name is Jim DeLang. I have an interest in American history, and I had relatives that fought in the Civil War.
Thank you.
John Clinican.
Gerald?
John. I've had an interest in the Civil War since high school, and a high school teacher got me excited about reading lots and lots of books. And I continued that study in college.
Thank you.
My name is Kara Wiltsy, and...
Kara?
Kara.
C-A-K-A-R-I.
And I enjoy history. I like the personal side of history. But it would be interesting to see history.
I'm Suzanne Chernholm, and I've had an interest in the Civil War since my old grandpa would tell about the news that Lincoln had been shot when they heard it in Norway, and how badly he felt.
Yeah. I think we all have a reminiscence of what happened to Kennedy, who was assassinated.
And that's the way Grandpa was with Lincoln.
Okay. I'm Ruth Haas, and I moved...
Louise?
Ruth.
I moved to the southeastern part of the country from the north, and since have acquired a different idea of the Civil War than I had when I learned about it and studied it in the north. So I thought this would add to my insights.
Thank you, Ruth.
I'm Harold Haas, and I just have a general interest in, saw the TV series that sparked interest.
Okay, maybe the back row over here.
I'm John Erickson.
Hi, John.
Without having heard the question, I heard.
Just a one or two sentences why your interest is in.
I heard a reference to Lincoln's death, and it just brought to mind one of the first things I remember as a child seeing on television that was of a more serious nature was a sort of documentary, I guess, on the death of Lincoln. It had a very strong impression on me at age 7 or 8.
Thank you.
Dick Smith, and I was rather interested in the Army Heritage Commission a couple of days ago, just put all this in that letter.
Jean?
Always been interested in history.
Okay. Maybe the back row.
I'm Ken Farman, and I just had an opportunity in college to visit some battlefields, and that has spurred my interest even more in with Vicksburg and Gettysburg and some of the others. I'd like to see some of the documents here.
Thank you.
I'm Ryan Peakey, and
Ryan, how do you spell your first name?
B-R-I-A-N.
Oh, Brian. Yeah. Okay.
And I've always found the Civil War a very interesting part of our nation's history.
Thank you, Brian.
I'm Aaron English, and I think it's always helpful to get an individual perspective on the war.
Okay, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N.
Okay. I'm Jack, since you're on the 21st hand, so.
Cool. That's okay.
And I've taught history for a number of years, but I'm always interested in documents and artifacts, diaries.
And as an English... Thank you. And as an English teacher, I appreciate your comments and corrections along the way. Seriously, this is where I am. Fantastic. Yes.
I'm Lori. This is Jordan. And I guess I've always been interested in history, just general history as well.
Okay.
I'm Shirley, and I guess I can say the same. Okay. Judy, yes, I'm interested, I was mostly in the individuals' reactions, what they wrote in their letters.
Thank you. Inclusive, yes.
Sarah,
do you want to talk about your interest, or just come along with Mom and Dad?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, Jack, I didn't mean to cut you off. Just let you know that I'm very interested in your perspective as well. Okay, it's interesting that I'm in a room of peace and justice. All along the wall here, we have pictures of peace advocates in the Lutheran Church. And the last lecture in here is how we make peace and be conscientious objectors. And I have no objection to that. In fact, underneath here, I told the last presenter to keep all her material here, because I want to take a look at it. Because Abraham Lincoln and Jeff Davis, if you get into some depth of Civil War history, were deathly opposed to war. They hated war. And at the same time, they had a great respect even for the enemy. So it wasn't just, you know, surface stuff like war maneuvers and type of machinery, but there was lots of feeling. If anybody happens to join the Civil War Roundtable, you'll know that people like Stonewall Jackson and Beauregard and some of the Northern generals were very, very feeling persons. Okay, thank you very much. My particular interest began when I was a stamp collector at 7 years of age, and I collected world stamps. They gave me a world perspective in geography and map making and so many things in history. Then I realized I couldn't collect all the stamps in the world, so I focused on plate blocks and then first day covers, and you can see where the evolution is going here. And then I began to collect envelopes of the 19th century. And then my dad had, without me knowing too much about it, had 14 albums, like you see on the table here, full of letters. And I didn't know he had these until he was 86 years old, and he invited me into his room and said, "You know, Chuck, I have some albums that I'd like to give to you, and if you don't want these, I can auction them off." And of course, my heart was in my mouth. I wasn't quite sure it was in these albums. And I brought two of what I consider the most two valuable albums, because I opened it up, the first album, the first thing I saw was a whole sheet of Confederate stamps that he collected. And I said, "Oh." And all of a sudden, I was revitalized in stamp collecting. And what's interesting about stamp collecting, cover collecting, is that you don't tear off the stamp and throw away the cover like so many people do. Because I happen to think a philatelist will collect stamps, but a person who's really interested in history and what goes on collects the cover and also the letter on the inside. And I'm extremely happy to announce that a number of those copies I have here have the actual letter on the inside. And what I'd like to do right now is actually read to you a letter sent by a soldier in 1864, approximately 1 year, July 29th, 1864, approximately 1 year, and maybe about 20 days after the Battle of Gettysburg. And I'll read this letter as a kind of an introduction, and then I'll kind of get into a quick postal history. And please convene or stop me at a certain point, because once I start, I'm a basket case. It starts out at from Camp Curtin, Harrisburg, July 29th, 1864. He begins, "Dear parents, I have but a few minutes to write this letter before the mail leaves. Direct your letter to Company B, 5th Regiment, Wisconsin Brigade." And he's writing from Harper's, he's on his way to Harper's Ferry. "We have been received orders to go to Harper's very, very soon. It is said Isaiah King is there, that he will go and that we will go in his brigade. If so, I shall have a chance to see him. Shall I make myself known to him?" Then Ossie, and I would imagine Ossie is a sister to this fellow who's writing, "say in her letter to him that I had enlisted and was at Hibbert in Hibbert's company. I wish she had. Hadn't I better have Captain Hibbert write a few lines recommending me?" I think he's talking about West Point here. "Do try to make every attempt to put me in this in this situation or this company. I can think of nothing else. It so occupies my mind. Have you heard from Uncle Sam? Inquire for me at the post office. From your son, Charles F. Power. Written from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to Camp Randall in Wisconsin. And then the P.S. I think is rather interesting. Write immediately. Did you get that truck in photography from Aussie? Write to me, tell me. All about your correspondence with King. Hardly know how to repay you. And this is how he plans to repay all the things he wants these people to do. Should I bring you a lock of Jeff Davis's hair? A secession flag? Or would you like to be an army nurse? I'll make you a head one. If so, I'll get you a place when I get my commission as lieutenant graduate at West Point. Signed, C.P. Power. But doesn't say too much about religion in there, of course, but we'll get to that. So that's an idea of a typical letter as an introduction. What I'd like to do right now is give a brief history from the colonial period up to the post-revolution, because I think it gets you into the climate and atmosphere of the postal system and the letters during the time of the Civil War. By the way, some of you have to leave for any reason. I won't feel offended because some of you may have appointments. If you all leave, then I have a problem. But I guess my story begins with a man who lived in the 1850s, just prior to the Civil War. And he wasn't a very successful person. He went out to become a minister in the Swedenborgian church. And he was a minister for 2 years, and that failed. So he decided to go into business, and he was in business for about 5 years, and that he ended up in bankruptcy. So everything in this man seemed to fail except for one thing. He happened to go to an auction, and he happened to find a diary or a journal by a person by the name of Finlay, who came from northern Scotland in the early 1600s. And he came to America as a surveyor. And while he was in America, he did journaling. And the journal is what happened in his life and his understanding of the early American colonies, focusing on the early postal system. And if you can imagine for a moment what it was like in the early 1600s with the postal system, there would be a ship, let's say, that would come from London, England, and would harbor in Boston Harbor with lots of mail on it. And what they would do is they would certify each family to have one representative to go down to the dock, get on the boat, and there's a long table with the mail on it, and that person was certified to pick up the mail and bring the mail back to their families. Well, it'd be like going down to Lake Chelan here to pick up your mail and bring it back up here again. Well, what happened is that, like in Holden Village, people just don't pick up their mail on time. They may wait a couple weeks. So what they felt they would do is have a central location, which happened to be a tavern in Boston that everybody knew the location of. They took the mail off the boat, put it on the table at this tavern, and then people came down and they picked up the mail, and that's how they received the mail. With the westward expansion of history, people moved in other parts of Massachusetts, and so it became impossible for people in the backwoods to come into Boston to pick up their mail, so they had what they call a Pony Express or a stagecoach that went out to the outskirts and outer rims of the settlements and had central locations to pick up mail. Well, Finlay talks about this, and something's about to happen back here with Martin Luther King. And so we talk about in the 1860s, you had the Pony Express rider. And thing that existed, an event that existed approximately 6 months, and then it went out of existence. And I have some Pony Express rider stamps of Fargo located here that you can take a look at. But it's one of the interesting stories of the early postal system. Another story talks about Finlay. Finlay talks about is that in Virginia, they had places that they would designate riders to go out to different parishes to deliver mail. And if they did not carry out their responsibility, they were fined about 25 or 26 hog shares of hay or wheat. I'm not quite sure what a hog share is. But anyway, he talked about this in detail. And then quickly going into the Civil Revolutionary era, the British were not very kind with their postal system. It was inefficient, it was slow. People didn't receive their mail on time. They could read any letter that they wanted to, and it was completely, nothing was private. And so they hired a person in the 1850s who later wrote a book by the name of Poor Richard's Almanac, and who later became the Postmaster General of our new nation. His name is Benjamin Franklin. But he was hired as an agent during the 1850s to make this place more efficient.
1750.
Mm-hmm. And what happened was that Benjamin Franklin eventually teamed up with George Washington. And Benjamin Franklin was also the editor of probably the most widely read newspaper out of Philadelphia. Was that the Inquirer or the Examiner? One of the two. Plus Poor Richard's Almanac that everybody read. And now he was also Postmaster General under the colonies and also under George Washington. So the communication was just fantastic during the Civil War because the communication was there. And the British had to go back to England for communication. And I think that was one of the reasons why the Revolutionary War became a victory for the colonists as compared to England. So, that's a little bit of the history. I went through as quickly as I could. Let's talk for a minute about worth and authenticity. And then I'll get into some of the pictures that I have. And then you can choose for yourself how you would pick out what is valuable to a collector. And by the way, I talked with Martin Marty about this. I was sitting in the carrels over here, and he said he'd be doing some research for me, and I said, wow, I guess. And so if I send him a letter, he'll be giving me some insight as to how to test authenticity of old documents and letters. And if I get on the ball, there's so many things going on out here that I have a hard time writing anything. So I'll get into the five levels of interest for collector's value and get into the authenticity and then get into the slide presentation. I want to give you a handout, and even though this handout, I only have 12 copies of this, so maybe each family can take one and just kind of pass these around. And this is from the Weekly Philatelic Gossip of March 7th, 1959. Don't let the word gossip in 1959 throw you, because if you do, well. And in this document, it says, what history-minded Confederate collectors look for in valuable documents. And I have five characteristics. Let's say you pick up a letter like, let's see. Excuse me a second. You pick up a letter like this, printed in my album, and you find the document. What do you think becomes most important when you look at a letter? And there are five categories to choose from. First of all, you look at the letter for the personal association. For example, if the letter was written by Abraham Lincoln, so let's say Sherman or even Jefferson Davis just before the Battle of Gettysburg, that becomes the most important thing to look for, what's on the front part of the letter. The second part is a historic value, association. If it's associated with Gettysburg, then that becomes extremely important because of the personal association and then the historic value. The cancellation is a third level of importance that you look for in a letter, because a cancellation fixes time and place of the event. That becomes number three. Number four is the intrinsic value. If you're a history buff, you collect it because you're interested in history. Let's say, for example, Martin Luther writes some Lengthen just before the Diet of Worms, okay? And I know you have the personal association. The historic association would be the Diet of Worms. If there's a cancellation, it'd be nice to know the exact date and time of that event.
And the intrinsic value indicates what's inside the letter, and then the condition of the letter becomes the least importance of all. Now, if you're a stamp collector, you'd like to have good condition, but a letter, that becomes the least important event. Now, obviously, if the personal association is forged or a counterfeit, what does that say about the integrity of the intrinsic and historic association? And Marty was rather intrigued in this, because obviously, if the outside is forged, it indicates that the inside hasn't much credibility either. Okay, so it's in that order. And don't let the word confederate on the beginning of this fool you. This guy is a brilliant person. He knows how to evaluate. Authenticity. After the Civil War, there were many people who were taking advantage of the popularity of the Civil War to forge and to counterfeit letters and stamps for the purpose of making money. And so we have people who are experts and professionals in checking out signatures. Is the ink authentic of that particular time, of the signature? Is the indentation that a person writes, is that authentic? I have a Daniel Webster signature, and you see he pushes certain areas on his pen as he writes out his signature. And they have a way of testing that now under a microscope and ultraviolet, many different ways of testing that. So the feds and the counterfeiters and the forgers are always at battle with each other and trying to outdo each other in their particular trade. With that background, I'm going to kind of stop for a minute. Do you have any questions or any corrections that you would like to make before I get into this slide presentation? Yes.
How long after the Civil War, for example, were there forged letters and documents?
I would say maybe 10, 15 years afterwards. Sure. Didn't take very long before they started to. And interestingly enough, it wasn't the design of the stamp that was hard to detect, it was the paper under the stamp. And so what they would do is get a cheap stamp or a cheap or an envelope, and then they would put the writing on top of it. The writing itself was easy to detect, but not the paper, which had watermarks and drills and everything else on it. And so that was all part of it. Any other questions or thoughts or any, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Anybody want to share any ideas about letters for about 5 minutes or thoughts? Okay, well, let's get into the presentation of these slides. And as I go through the slides, it'll mostly be covers. And afterwards, I'll be glad to open up some of these letters. I have one there in 1797. Which was written, I would imagine, probably even during the time that Benjamin Franklin, when did Benjamin Franklin die, you know? Oh, okay. So with that, and as I show these letters, can somebody get the lights? Here. I start out with this signature. It's a signature of whom on the upper right-hand corner? Daniel Webster. And I'm pretty sure this is authentic because my dad in 1959 went to these auctions and he bought many of these letters in 1959. And if you're taking a look at the worth of an envelope, what's the first thing you'd look for on this particular envelope? It's a little test here. Number one is personal association. If the Daniel Webster and Mr. John Taylor is authentic, that becomes the number one test to find out what the worth of it is to a collector and also to a historian and a theologian. If you really want to get into history here, what about church document? You always want to find out whether the person writing is an authentic person. And just to get into the authenticity, you'll notice that there are some areas in that signature that are pressed on harder than others. And the ink becomes important. And the quality and the type of paper is important to determine whether this is an authentic envelope or not. I get into it with baseball cards with young people. And I go to their conventions and have all their baseball cards. And I ask them,
a terrible question. I should compliment them first, and sometimes I forget. How do you know this is an authentic baseball card? And invariably, the first thing they will say, well, I bought it at a store. And that becomes the depth of understanding. And I say, that's fine. Then you see in the upper right-hand corner, the little silver thing, kind of like a silver chip, that indicates that this is authentic, and I say, you're gaining some understanding. This is a very important letter written by Hamlin, who was a vice president under Abraham Lincoln, written to the Honorable George Wells, who was the Secretary of the Navy. And so if you want to have an example of an envelope that has personal association, this would be it. And then the second would be why it was written. And maybe it had to do with something of the early part of the Civil War, because Hamlin was soon out of office, or he died at the very beginning of the Civil War. The third characteristic is what?
The cancellation,
because that fixes the time and place of the event. And that gives you a clue as to what the letter's about. And then the fourth is the intrinsic value. If you're a Navy man or a woman, or if you're interested in vice presidencies, this would be the envelope that you'd like to look at. This is what they call a steamboat. On April 6th, I'm not quite sure what the 10 stands for, they had steamboats that would go all the way around South America, or they would go from New York City to Savannah, Georgia, and this would indicate the steamboat trips. And while they were out in the ocean, they were not considered a part of the United States or a part of the nation. So the postal system almost went out of existence as long as they left the port. But when they came into the port again, then the postal system went back into effect. This is an interesting letter. It says Way 11. And it doesn't have a person who sent it, but it does have a cancellation. March 3rd, I think that was 1830. And again, I have all these envelopes over here. And Way 11 simply meant that as a Pony Express rider would ride off to bring their mail, 10 cents would go to the government, and 1 penny would go for the Pony Express rider. Now, to earn extra money, as they were going from farmland to farmland, it was not unusual for farmers to hail the Pony Express rider over and say, would you be willing to herd some goats or animals or sheep from my farm over to another farm? And so they're kind of double dipping into government funds, but it was very... So if the Pony Express rider was really adept and a good farmer, he would know how to do all that herding from one farm to the next as he was delivering mail. So you have the Way 11. And the postage in this case was collected by the addressee. Interesting thing about the Civil War, only enlisted men were permitted to send mail free of charge. Officers had to pay for their mail. Now, but the catch was, is that when an enlisted man or woman sent the mail, it had to be collected COD. So once it arrived at the place, then the person receiving the mail had to pay the 3 cents. And the rate of mail was not determined by the weight of the letter, but by the distance that it went. So for example, if you went 3,000 miles, anything under 3,000 miles, the postage would be 3 cents. And also, the enlisted man didn't have much access to stamps, which came into existence around 1847. Because they were always moving from one place to the next. And we're going to show a letter here eventually of how everything was authenticated. Here's another interesting, this is Stephen Douglas' signature. And again, let's go through our 5 steps here. What's the most important part of this letter? Number one? Yes.
Oh, no, I'm just going to tell you it's 15, past 15 after. You wanted me to tell you right on.
I know. Okay. Let's go quickly here.
50s, just before the Civil War, we had private local post offices in New York City. This is kind of an introduction. And it showed about 20 or 30 different post offices that made their own stamps for sale in New York City. We talk about having one private post office department now under, under private enterprise. They had 24 in one city. And it showed, this shows the variety of the different stamps in New York City during this time. What's interesting about this is that the Confederacy wanted to make their own stamps, and he went to a New York designer to design the stamps for the Confederacy. Tremendous loyalty here to the North, right? And then the stamps were made in England and shipped over from England to the Confederacy. And of course, the English were very glad to do this because they wanted to divide and conquer, right? There's some more varieties of the stamps that they had in just in New York City. These are Pony Express stamps. The Pony Express took place in 1861, and it lasted for about maybe 6 or 7 months. Then it went out of existence. This is the Wells Fargo. And it went from Independence, Missouri to Sacramento. And some of these stamps are worth, this is a $4 stamp, and this is a $2 stamp. And these stamps are worth a lot more on envelopes because there weren't that many envelopes sent. So the stamps on the envelopes are worth a lot more than the stamps individually. I show these to kind of show the different varieties of, I'll quickly go through this. These are forgeries of stamps during this time. And a forgery is a form of counterfeiting where they alter what a stamp looks like. And if you're a philatelist and want to get a stamp during the 1860s, you look very carefully as to the design of one stamp as compared to the other. Here's the original, and here's a forgery down here. And there's very little detail. See the little mark here on the person's hat as compared to the little mark up here? So you really have to have a keen eye to determine what is authentic and what is original. Woodford Scott. He wrote this letter. He was the first general during he was the commander in chief at the first part of the Civil War. And he wrote this in 1828. Look at his handwriting. And he's a very young man with poor handwriting, or he was even old in 1828. Because he soon died after the Civil War began. But I think these are all authentic signatures again. Again, going to the five categories. What's most important? The signature. Second, historical value. Third, fourth, intrinsic value. And fifth, condition.
The notation free on that.
What's that?
There was a notation that said free.
Yes, because all people in government position could send letters free. Here's a letter from Charles Sumner, who was a senator from Massachusetts who opposed Abraham Lincoln because he was not peacemaking enough, I guess. It was sent to somebody in Maine. This is an interesting call, a soldier's letter. Because the soldiers did not have access to stamps, and I apologize for going over right now. You don't mind if I keep going, do you? Otherwise, I'll stop and for discussion.
Keep going.
Okay. A soldier's letter, before it could be sent, could be signed by either the chaplain or the company officer. This one happened to be signed by the chaplain, and therefore, it was sent by the soldier to Massachusetts. Upon arrival to the destination, there's a due free 3 cents. That means the person receiving the mail had to pay 3 cents for the letter. This is the letter I read to you at the very beginning. This is from a soldier at Harrisburg on his way to Harper's Ferry a year after Gettysburg. And because he was a candidate for being an officer, he had to pay the postage. If he were just an enlisted man, he could send it free and it'd be collected COD. This is interesting. Postage currency. because coinage was so hard to get in the silver and copper, they decided to get official government paper and put postage stamps on it, and that became currency, and they used the metal for the purpose of war. Eventually, at one time, they pasted all these stamps on this official currency, and then they thought, well, we've got this, we'll print it. And you see 5 10-cent stamps, meaning 50 cents, that could be used just for the sake of purchasing postal material. You cannot use this as general currency. And so this is quite common until maybe a number of years even after the Civil War. In order to earn money, they had all kinds of fairs and they had all kinds of conventions, and they would sell stamps like this for an exorbitant price in order to pay for the expense of the Civil War. I'll just quickly go through some of these. Now, what you're going to see here is indicative to the jingoism. If you think that people are hard-hearted today about the enemy, I'm going to be showing some pictures of what peacemaking is not all about. This is the picture of Abraham Lincoln hanging upside down. This is a Confederate letter. Abraham Lincoln the Destroyer, obviously from the South. This was a letterhead that they used to send out throughout the Confederacy. But this is tame. This kind of describes General Winfield Scott, old fuss and feathers. Beauregard, this is obviously a Northern propaganda piece. General Beauregard in the formal pink. Death to traitors. What I'm intrigued about is an excellent printing and the excellent coloration of the printing of the time of the Civil War. And don't get me wrong, there were many people in the armed service who were opposed to war and who were opposed to this kind of jingoism. We have it today too, don't we? Yeah. I like this one especially. This is Virginia at the Revolutionary time. Here's Grandma and other well-mannered kids and children. And this is Grandma again. The kids are unruly. This is Virginia during the Civil War. Obviously a Northern propaganda piece. And I'll just kind of quickly go through these. Yeah, I can tell you a story about this one, but Stevens, again, when I take a look at it, Stevens was the vice president of the Confederacy during the Civil War. This is an upside down one. I'm not quite sure to see it. This is Southern cancellation over a Northern stamp. There were so many Northern stamps down south at the beginning of the Civil War, they didn't know how to get rid of them. And so the Confederates had to eat their pride and use U.S. stamps and put the Southern cancellation over it. And I'm not quite sure how they compensated for that. And I'm not quite sure if this is related to the president or not. Confederate official of the Post Office Department stamp over a U.S. stamp of Confederacy. And here again you have an idea. All these stamps, by the way, were imperforated. There weren't any perforations in between the stamps. They had to cut them by scissors. So if you see a Confederate stamp with perforations on it, it's a counterfeit or a fake. Here's a Confederate letterhead. This is interesting because, I'll end with this, because, okay, I have more time. This is a letterhead that you would assume was from the South. It has Jeff Davis's name on top here, A.H. Stevens, who was a vice president. But then on second look, you would see Madison County, New York, and you would see a U.S. stamp inside the Stars of the Confederacy. And said, what in the world is this all about? In the upper right-hand corner, there was a phrase here that was, right, I'm not quite sure what it was. But a person really bought this thing up because they thought it was authentic. This guy was really clever. Actually, this whole thing was what they call a civil Confederate patriot. And he made up the whole cover himself. He made up this story to go along with it. Now, for anybody who's unfamiliar with the Civil War, or doesn't look closely at what's going on here, would easily buy this for maybe $400 or $500. But knowing that this guy was really clever, I think was important.
One more thing about cancellations. I got a Neil Armstrong letterhead. My heart went up through my mouth because I was in Ohio at the time when the Eagle landed. And I found out that what happens before you buy any signature, you would have a person, let's say Neil Armstrong, be sitting at a desk with one pen, okay? And then you'd have 100 letterheads across the top on a screen. Get the picture already? And each one would have a pen. So as Neil Armstrong would be writing his signature authentically on the lower level, all the other pens would be concurrently writing his signature on the 100 other envelopes across the top. And that's perfectly legal. I mean, it's a secondhand signature. And they could tell that because of the even lettering of the artificial pen as compared to his actual handwriting. So that's what happens. I'm going to end there because I promised to do that 10 minutes ago. And I'm glad I had a convener to help me out with that. Could I have the lights for a second? And as the lights are going on, I'm just going to quickly go through the rest of these. Oh, backwards. Thank you. Yeah. Here are some more stamps. But if you want to stay afterwards and look at the albums I have up here that has all these envelopes in them, you should sure do that. I left the number of them at home. And here's one album of the Confederate stamps, and the other album of the stamps prior, or envelope prior to the Civil War, are over there, and you can look at these at your leisure. And I'll be standing over if you have any questions. Thank you for your attention, and maybe some of you came here and wanted me to read all kinds of letters, and I ended up doing this, if that's okay with you. But at least you have an idea of what to look for as far as authenticity and also the worth of value to a collector, and also for those who are in theology, what's authentic in documents. Thank you. I don't do this for everybody. That's a Confederacy one here.
My grandmother left me a collection of dimes. Yeah, but my guess is they don't go back.
You just had a leaf doing this, and you see some signatures.
Back in 60
at least
years.
They have the silver.
Kind of the process of translating them. You see me in the.
When I first saw that, I thought it was gardens. You know, the Carter kind of like version
from a letter on a piece of paper. And then what I eventually did.
Oh, is this the money?
Yeah, well, that's those are old German planes. A whole little girl could have bought it. She would have bought a red.
Look here, Salisbury, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a German now.
Anyway, I'll leave that out.
Center.
This. Then I had the Confederacy album over here.
Yeah, big prison.
It has a stamp.
Yeah,
you did. Thanks very much. So, but I don't want to take it down for everyone to view or do.
Okay, then we'll retain.
I can understand a little
South
bit. And what's your?
Here's that Neil Armstrong I was talking about.
His instruction.
Yeah, Neil Armstrong's signature.
And was it really necessary?
And
also,
there was a lot of blood.
Oh, yes. And how poor the South really was economically as compared to the North. So rural, very little industry.
His signature.
To get a story of the poor paying for the
And like our part of the state was really all small farms for the most part. And none of this
plantation.
No, not plantation.
You guys, would you consider that the actual signature of a person writing?
And actually, they didn't want to serve in the Confederate Army either. They would pay people to, you know, take their place.
You feel a little taken, although it's certainly the same.
Enough.
And you know, is there
satiated
that is actually the way that was done?
They get a microscope.
We visited last spring break. We had a meeting in New Orleans for a portion of time, but we went to the Bayou country.
I read a book
called We had never done that
before. Salamander Letters, Mark Hoffman, for the Mormon Church, where he took all those forged documents and sold to the Mormon Church.
Martin Brady mentioned that.
That was a very interesting book. I can't remember the name. I think it was called Salamander Letters. But boy, that explained a lot of what you said about the ink analysis and the way that they would get to check out the authenticity of some of that.
I wonder, in fact, Art said he had instructions just about a particular flooding.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of news clippings from that time too. My dad came out from. I was interested in the history of. I'm not pastor of Bible Church, but I was interested in the history of that, and it was kind of neat to read through that book and see what I was doing.
But if this were a forged,
of course you've done Gettysburg.
Handwriting, what does it say about the contents?
That's impressive.
The whole contents are tossing away because it lacks authenticity.
I really enjoyed the discussion.
Well, I'll tell you a machine
history. It was good.
What's so fast?
Good history.
Thank you.
Looking at the handwriting that you hear shows that our handwriting has gone downhill from what it used to be 100 years ago. Oh, but it didn't have to be.
Are these envelopes? Say what they are. The envelopes. Is it by? Is it what they're supposed to be? Or is that the stamp?
And many times the clergy was a matter of fact, a lot of my friends.
Well, he was an agent hired by the British.
The invasion of Russia. We don't make much of that.
Invasion of what?
Russia. I don't even know we ever invaded Russia.
A lot of my older friends, grew up on farms, small farms around Hickory, you know, and then the families came to town to live.
So have you New Yorkers been accepted?
Yes, because...
Well, as much as you ever get accepted in the community that you ever lived in for three generations.
Yeah.
You know, Fort Wayne was like that, too.
But there's so many people now from the North, and from foreign countries even, Germany in particular.
In our area.
Charlotte area, too.
Charlotte area is really a go-go area.
Oh, yes, definitely. And when we moved there,
How far are you from Charlotte?
We're about an hour away.
They stamped with it, so the person can write back.
It was just a sweet southern city.
Charlotte?
And then they got this big.
In the stamp with the letters, it's kind of right back.
How many people live in Charlotte?
I don't know.
More than a quarter million?
No.
Oh, yes, I think so.
Although I know that, let's say the.
Yeah, because it's compared it with Fort Wayne and Fort Wayne.
$350,000, something like that.
Because Fort Wayne was about $225,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, bigger than.
But not too much. But now it's the big banks who built these big skyscrapers and each one has to outdo the other. You know, that sort of thing. They got a big convention center under construction.
Because you'd have to exchange your earnest
debt. That sort of thing.
Somewhere, someone told me or read that they want a major league team. They want a sports, what, basketball or?
Well, they've got.
They've got that.
They've got a basketball.
They're going for football.
Yeah.
They're trying to get a foot out and then it fell. No, what's your?
How could they do that? There are other communities that are within driving distance.
But see, in the list of the year.
Oh, yes, yeah. Like even in Hickory, I'm sure there's support.
Chris, parents had about basketball.
And parents had paid for it.
One would assume just as.
Was the CMD back then, was it?
It would be about.
Was it, was it?
Yeah.
You know, it goes all the way down to South Carolina. They would draw all the way from Clemson University, Greenville, South Carolina.
I think there was lots of inefficiency. But during the Civil War, because of that inefficiency.
You know, they're going to issue two franchises.
They began to deliver.
Baltimore, sure.
St. Louis ones.
Yeah, St. Louis.
And I think that. And
they think they got to chop it up. I don't know.
The war casualties.
I don't know.
We want to find out what happened right away. And so
I think it's their television area that's probably inspirational. How big will their television area go?
Rather
than having to come
all the way down to Folsom.
Hard to Washington. How do they still walk out of town?
Yeah, oh,
they might be sitting on a slope on.
Well, they do with Charlotte, too.
Hi. Well, I looked at you real quick.
In third class, well, the officers had stamped on this to be that second class.
Well,
I'm an Eastern.
What's going on?
Yeah.
I don't know if they had stamped classifications.
Well, it's something, you know, there's so many enlisted men, and I don't know if they're all saying letters or not, but if there were more enlisted men sending to go, yes, they would, you know, it would probably be slower. Mm-hmm. In the offices with stamps, it requires faster.
I don't think there was that much differentiation. I think we should put a proper community in the sense of that. There was too much pride and putting a listed man under.
I would like to read this then and leave it.
I was just part of your question. At the end, an officer had these stamps and paper that some people sending, and your listed man. I had to get the signatures of chaplains or a couple of commanders of Army Temple and that permitted. You were in the presentation just now?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, what if you weren't close to a chaplain and your officer was dead? They would assign you another one, wouldn't they?
They're not sure they had an ex-prison rank.
Okay.
They did that with a chaplain or something. Usually the company commander
just stamps on stamps on ropes for a while. Confederate sticks.
Now, these are just old German.
How much would these be worth now?
Well, some of them would be worth more than others, but should this is during the inflation time after World War I, and we'd have to have a whole wheelbarrow full of stamps left for example, we would look how high these denominations are. Get it to the millions. Here. This one is, a million. If you had a whole wheelbarrow full of this stuff, it's kind of and before the inflation, the creditors were chasing the debtors. Afterwards, the debtors with the wheelbarrows were chasing the creditors because they wanted to pay for it, but this money was very cheap. So
if you had, like, for example, if you had a $50,000 loan in your house, pretty soon $50,000 would be nothing, and you just won't pay it off right away. The banks were broke because they would be. They would have to raise your. They're talking about that sort of situation happening in a kind of inflationary thing where they would increase, the banks would increase your loan amount.
It was a definite problem.
Inflation going that fast.
Oh, yeah.
And that's.
It wasn't
they can't give out that money to that privilege.
And of course, they had a lay someone, so it had to be the Jewish people, or anybody who had any kind of defect, like retaliation or Jehovah's Witnesses and many other people. So it became a scapegoat. And unless you're unemployed yourself and go through that pain, you really don't understand how the Jewish people must have felt. They were very angry. And
how is it?
Oh, yeah. There's 1,000 people, the Jewish people wouldn't understand. Jews have so much time.
Yes.
They can do this for us.
Yeah.
Make it there,
yeah?
Yeah. So, okay. You may keep this if you wish.
Yes, I know, but I think it was just good. Go on after a bit, maybe someone else will add a little more.
Okay.
Anybody know what those do?
Again, I'm not trying to glorify the Civil War or anything. I'm just trying to and give people a lot of water.
Well, that was an interesting thing, just from my perspective. I didn't stand up in class to begin, so I asked them, but from my perspective, I think the only way to continue the peace in the world is to use the word to discuss the word. You know, I think man is going to continue to fight. You know, we've already decided on this because man's nature, I like this. Without Christ, there is no peace. With God, with other men.
But then you have people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King who didn't totally disavow the world. He said there may be righteous, there may be a righteous situation where people who are totally lacking power and they utilize it.
Yeah.
So it can't be green.
But you sort of study history out of
that. Oh, sure.
So are these people worth anything now?
Or are they just worth...
Well, this one is 1797. This is written.
I mean, it's money.
These books are probably worth thousands and thousands of dollars.
I have no idea, because I haven't evaluated it. And basically, I mean, the stamps and covers, not a very
Did you just get these?
I got them about last year. And I did lots of research on this. But you have these different categories.
You didn't have no idea your father had all this stuff. You've been coming
up here. Yeah. Well, I knew he collected stamps, but I knew he didn't know he collected all this material here. And then you get into... these are the Holy Express stamps. They're only in existence in U.S. history for 6 months.
What about during the,
Not the Wells Fargo Holy Express, which is part of the museum of 7 months.
This was really
good, yes.
So when I was in the Holy Express, I was thinking during Cowboy out west, Texas, going to the war, never during Massachusetts, and during the Revolution, during war times.
I guess this particular company, the famous, the most famous, Lost Cargo. What happened soon after when it came into existence, the Holy Express was kind of human, the telegraph system. And that just kind of poured out the end of the
Holy Express.
And then there were steamboats that were going around South America, the telegraph and the railroads. You didn't even have steamboats carrying them out in the air. And then they had the...
Thank you. What was your name?
Charles Hartel.
Charles Hartel.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Hartel.
Thank you. So, this is very exciting. It gets beyond the history of our neighborhood.
Well,
Ken
told me that it was going to be a Civil War with teaching. And I thought it was going to be like about how the war was fought. I think it would be letters and stamps. And I found it's very interesting how they got the word through.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Well, he was under an agent under the British authority and also selected by George Washington to be the Postmaster General. And that did not become an official department until 1899. Of course, by that time, he had taken the Postmaster
General. Yeah. Well, so what Benjamin Franklin would get all the news we get to George Washington during the Revolutionary War?
Well, he has such a knowledge of the postal system. People are writing letters. You know, it must be easier to correspond with George Washington than a British correspondent across the sea.
Yeah, for just pretty much, to get back.
And that was a big group they were at, which you know more.
Oh, yeah.
The British. And it just so happened that these people were looking there.